Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, Saif.
Yeah. Oh, and that fourth meal. No more fourth meal.
You're cutting off.
Cutting off, man. I'm 3 weeks, no fast food.
Good job. Our guest today, this is incredibly exciting. He's not only a TV star every day on Pix 11.
Radio personality.
And a radio personality.
And rapper.
He's so many things.
One of the first
Jews. One of the first Jews I really admired in hip-hop. That's right. Why'd you whisper, Jew?
I just get nervous.
MC Search is in the building.
What is going
Juan
on?
Juan Epstein.
Search.
What is going on, Saif?
What's
Saif,
good,
wake
man?
Up, B. Wake up.
This is regular Saif.
Okay, no, it's not regular Saif. See, I remember regular Saif from Fat Beats going, fuck, I got to play another independent record. Jesus.
Yeah,
that's the Saif I remember. I don't know about this Saif.
I was low
right
key
here.
There, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember him.
You know, and Saif was excited to play independent records back then.
No, he wasn't. He was DJing and miserable. And was like,
you still seem miserable.
Yeah, yes.
See, we don't have a lot of people to testify that you still seem.
This is my face. It's just droopy.
You have a miserable face.
Search. I know Search. Through Riz.
Yep.
And then Clips, through Ill Bill.
Ill Bill.
And Clips.
And that
Nonfiction.
Yep.
And then.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Nonfiction was on Searchlight.
That's right. I put that group together.
You put them together?
Put them together.
Man, Fat Beats.
Yep.
How else? For Search was the first. I'm gonna do all my Search stuff. Search was the first person I knew with the Skytel, the two way before it was like the flip up two ways that we know.
Wow, what did he have?
It was another version. Pager.
Yeah, it was the first.
Before you had a keyboard.
The only person that happened in New York was me, Nori, and Eclipse. We used to text each other.
Nori, CNN Nori?
Yeah. How'd you do it with no keyboard?
No, there was like these set responses.
Right.
Like, on my way, thank you.
Call you in 5 minutes, yeah. Call you in 10 minutes.
You got to just write those things to each other.
On my way, hey.
Could you write anything else? Could you write numbers?
You could write numbers, but you'd have to tap it in with your phone. It was really bugged.
But what about if people called you? Could they?
No, it was like a beeper, so they would beep you the number.
Right.
You'd call in. You'd call into the
Skytel. Right. It was a beeper. Right.
Right. And then you'd.
But you could reply with "on my way."
Right.
And other people who had them, you reply, yeah.
Then I was the first one with the flip top.
You had the first flip.
Me, Nori.
What was your first? Clips. What was your first? Alert.
First alert?
The first.
It was to Eclipse, like, yo, hit me. I think that was it.
No. I mean, what
song?
Was the first? Yeah, the first song that
Jesus, I don't
know. I remember the first time. Jermaine Dupri was up here. We all had the.
Right, because we were programming music sounds, right.
But the first time I heard, because we all had them, but it was just like the regular alert. And then he came in and his was like, his went, and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because you could program music.
How did people program them, by the way? How did you know how to program?
They had a music. They had thing. There was a music key.
There was a menu in there. the thing became a keyboard, and you
programmed. So you had to play it yourself.
Yeah. But once people got a hold of it, you could just beam it. You beam, like, once you had a song made and saved, right. You just beam it to your friends.
Oh, man. I want one so bad.
You never had one?
I still have two.
They work?
Yeah. I don't know if Skytel's still in existence.
No, they don't work.
Yeah.
There's like a different.
So if you remember, I told you the story before about that at my radio station, PGC at the time, there was a great DJ there named a Pitbull, DJ CeeLo, funk regulator CeeLo. Uh-huh. And CeeLo said he could get me one for $200. And I gave him $200. And I was very excited.
Oh, that was probably the.
Because I had a walkabout.
WorldCom.
I had a walkabout. Yeah, he was WorldCom.
Everybody at that company went under because they were doing so many shady deals.
Yeah, anyways, he never got me in. And I had to go I had to go wait outside the club for him. Wait outside one of his gigs in the parking lot
to get,
to get my $200 back. Yes. Anyways, Search.
What are we talking about?
Where do Search we start with MC Search?
I have no idea. Wherever you want to start.
Queens?
Queens is a good place
Queens
to start.
Queens is where you're from, right?
Yep.
Born I have the first Rockaway, MC Queens. Search record before third base.
What's
I have
that?
It on vinyl. What is it called?
It's called Melissa. It's on Warlock Records, 1985.
Oh, no, wait. That might not be it. Maybe I don't have the first one.
Which one do you have?
Do you have another Search record?
I had a record that I started a label called Idler's Records. We had a record called Hate Boy and Go White Boy.
And was your name MC Search?
Yep.
Name was always MC Search?
Always MC Search.
And what part of Queens are you from?
Far Rockaway.
Oh, you're from Far Rockaway?
Yep.
Oh.
A.K.A. Alcatraz.
Okay, let's start here. What were your parents' What did they do wrong in life that a Jewish boy ended up in Far Rockaway?
No, Far Rockaway is a good neighborhood at the time. Like,
it was.
Yeah, like they bought a little piece of property, little house, $40,000. You know,
still have it?
Still have it. My dad's still living there.
Wow.
And yeah, nah, it was a good little neighborhood.
It didn't get rough as you were growing up?
It did get rough as I was growing up, but it was okay because my neighborhood was kind of isolated and insulated because it was the Jewish community.
What number are we talking about? Like, what number street are you at? Roughly?
I'm not on any number. It's Almont Road.
And what's it close to?
It's close to Beach 9th Street.
Beach 9th Street. Oof, that's far. Yeah. My grandparents lived Beach 122nd.
Oh, yeah, because they were
rich. Regular Rockaway.
Yeah, they were rich. They were in Reese Park. They had money.
Yeah, right near Reese Park.
So
yeah,
Beach 9 is
broke
rough.
Jews lived in Almont Road.
Yeah. That's a long ways away.
So what's Beach 1? That's like fucking crackheads and ghetto.
Well, no. That's the Irish. The Irish living right near the Atlantic Beach Bridge.
Well, and it's funny, but my grandparents' neighborhood in regular Rockaway is mostly Irish, too.
Yeah.
I guess it just changes as you go down the kind of Irish you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So were you instantly drawn to black music and culture from jump? Was that just...
No, I mean, there was Parliament Funkadelic, there was George Clinton, that was, you know, but I grew up listening to Zeppelin, The Doors, Talking Heads, a lot of that. It was just a lot of my friends who I grew up with that lived in Redfern, they were listening to Ohio Players, Stephanie
like
Mills.
The Projects?
Yeah, Redfern Projects. So they were listening to Ohio Players, they were listening to, like, Patti LaBelle, Melville Moore, you know, so I'd hear that music on the other side. And my man, Steven Henderson, who I used to go hang out at his crib a lot, his mom would play all sorts of music, Teddy Pendergrass. Like, so I would spend a lot of time. My mom and dad worked crazy hours, so I spent a lot of time at Steven's house.
What'd your mom and dad do?
My mom worked a lot of jobs. She almost worked like 12 jobs. But her main job was, before Weight Watchers was national, they were in New York. There was a competitor called Weigh-In. My mom was a lecturer for Weigh-In.
No way.
Which is surprising because I'm a fat bastard, right?
No. Well, it's you're rebelling. You're rebelling.
You're now rebelling.
I was rebelling then, too. I was a fat bastard.
You were a fat kid?
I was a fat kid. I was chubby. I was definitely thickums. Yeah.
You had a good thin run, though.
I had a good thin. No, I was like 215. I don't know if it was a thin run. I was just thinner. Dancing a lot. I don't know if I was.
Yeah, a lot of running men. A
lot of running men.
A lot of running men.
A lot of the WAP. A lot of running
men. A lot of WAP. A lot of running men.
A lot of German Smurf. A lot of dancing. A lot of kick steps.
And what did your dad do?
My dad was a stockbroker, and then he went to work here in this building in 395 Hudson for the Boy Scouts when the National Association of the Boy Scouts was in this building.
Wow.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So I used to come to this building all the time as a kid, help him unload his stuff, his Boy Scout stuff.
Really?
Yep.
All right, so at what point does it start getting musical for MC Search?
Started getting musical about eighth grade. I started listening to these second and third generation basement tapes of, like, the Kango Crew, Grandmaster Reggie Reg, Playboy Club, Lord Turu and the Eternal Force.
Like, I'm still waiting to hear someone I know.
I know!
Are these Queens people?
They're Queens. Kango Crew is from Harlem. They're from Uptown.
I don't know any of those names.
Well, how about Busy B?
There you
Busy
go.
Okay. Okay. There we go. Busy B, Kumo D, Treacherous these 3.
We're talking
1980. Yeah, and then the thing that was crazy, the crazy shit was then I go to High School Music and Art, so I'm going from Far Rockaway.
Where's High School Music and Art?
135th and Convent in Harlem.
Wow.
So I was on a 2-hour and 22-hour ride on the A-train, and I go into the lunchroom.
It took you 2 hours to get to school?
2 hours and 22 minutes.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I used to have to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning and make an 8:45 class.
Did you knock out on the train?
I knocked out.
I'd say you throw on the headphones and just knock out,
there
right?
There was no... What headphones?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Headphones. No headphones.
A Kobe Walkman?
No, I didn't. No, the Kobe
it was
Walkman.
80.
That was not until 84, B. Walkman didn't come out. You got to remember, the Walkman didn't come out until 81.
So in 80, there was nothing.
No, there was books.
Transistory.
I was doing the knowledge, B.
You was doing the knowledge. Well, that's the upside of the 2-hour train ride, though. You can get a good nap.
Oh. Yeah, I could get a great nap.
I would love a 2-hour train ride.
I would have Bob Vaz on my... Fava's coming down my chin.
Yeah, you were out.
I was out.
It's not like you have to really worry about oversleeping it.
No, no, no. You could, but then you go wake up at 205th and Dykeman, and that was all the way down. You didn't want to do that. So you'd have to have this internal clock that was like, 125th Street, get off now.
All right, how do you go?
Change for the one train to 135th.
All right, so you're
I go down to the basement, and then I see the Kango crew. I see Dana Dane. I see Slick Rick. I see Lance Omega, original Peter Gunn. Like, they're all in a cypher doing Lottie Dottie. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the craziest shit I've ever seen in my life.
Where were they?
In the basement of High School Music and Art.
What do you mean in the basement?
When
you were going to school?
My freshman year in 1980, I went to the basement for orientation, and there was a cypher going on, and these dudes were banging on the lunch table, and the Kango crew.
They went to that school?
Yeah. Kango crew were doing Lottie Dottie.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah. They were doing Lottie
Dottie. So right when you get to school at orientation, you see Slick Rick?
I see Slick Rick and Dana Dane and Kangos.
Are y'all the same age?
No, they're a year older than me.
1 year older.
Yeah, they graduated in 84.
Hold on. Sorry. I don't want to sound like an ignoramus here. I didn't know Slick Rick and Dana Dane were connected.
They were in a group together called the Kango Crew.
And did they have
started rhyming? That's the Kango Crew. Oh. Before he was with Doug.
Before he was with Doug. Yeah, way before he was with Doug. And they had crazy like routines that were known all through the city. Hillbilly Girl, Indian Girl. We liked to party.
Yeah, why did I not know? I thought Dana Dane bit Slick
Everyone
Rick's
thought
style.
That. Oh, Everyone
no,
thought that.
No, no. They came up together. Dana Dane and Slick Rick came up together.
Wow.
Yeah.
An so Indian girl,
they don't have
that.
A good. They don't have a good PR for that knowledge.
Maybe your PR guy can go work.
Gary Rosen, get to work on that, baby.
On Slick Rick and Dana Dane, their connection making more sense.
We're clear this guy looks like Dave Foley from News Radio.
You're absolutely right.
Have you ever gotten that before?
Dave Foley?
Isn't that his name?
No, his name.
News Radio?
That's his name. Do you think so?
From the side angle?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, Gary Rosen, a little bit.
What do you mean by side angle? Like,
right here, like, AKA profile? AKA Dave Foley.
You don't mean his, even on?
You don't mean his juice.
You're on.
Yeah. You don't mean his juice schnoz.
No, no.
I don't have a juice schnoz.
He does not have a juice
schnoz. He's got a juice schnoz.
Yeah. Oh, you do. Yep, you got a bit.
You've got more of a juice schnoz.
No, we can have a juice schnoz battle all day. I'll battle Gary Rosen.
Yeah, I think you should. I think you should battle him for the juice schnoz. I think he's got more of a Goyim schnoz.
No.
Right. Yes, I do.
He does.
Okay, so you see, right from the beginning.
Yeah, I see right from the beginning, and I'm like, oh, this is. And then I saw the first white rapper I ever saw, Vanilla B, a.k.a. Lord Scotch, a.k.a. Keo, a.k.a. Blake Latham.
Vanilla B.
Vanilla B.
He had to go with the name Vanilla, right?
Yeah, it was 1980. It was 1980, B.
And what was he like? And
who
was he?
He was incredible. He walked around with a Lucite cane and a Kango tilted to the side. And
Sounds a little bit like one Prime Minister Pete Nice. At least with the cane.
Yeah, no. He was a cool dude. I looked up to him, and
so you were instantly like, ooh, there are white guys who could do this.
Yeah, like I always thought, like I was like the closet rapper because I was like rhyming for myself. Like I would never rhyme in front of my boys because white boys weren't rhyming. Like it was crazy, you know. You just did it for yourself. So it's like I'd rap about like the NCAA finals, Georgetown goes down to Villanova, and do different rhymes for myself and just, you know, whatever. And then I was heavily influenced by Dana and Slick Rick. And like,
so hold on. So what was your relationship with Dana and Slick Rick? Like, did you become
friends
with them?
I had no relationship. I was just like humbled by them.
Were they cool?
They were mad cool.
They were the cool kids.
They were mad cool, and I was not cool.
Did Slick Rick have an eye patch yet?
Yes.
Already?
Yes.
He was shot that young?
Yes.
Wow. So they're the cool kids, a grade older.
Yeah.
You have your eye on them, but you're just quietly rapping by yourself.
Right. I'm in the corner, like.
Is there a Pete Nice? Is there a Daddy Rich? Is there?
No, there's no Pete Nice. There's no Daddy Rich. It's just Search. Just Search by myself.
And that
was a graffiti name. I didn't even think about being MC Search. That was just what I was tagging.
Now, were you a prolific tagger?
No, I was terrible.
I was a nerdy tagger.
I was definitely a toy. I did not have hand skills at all.
So you just did it to do it?
Right. I just did it to do it because it was the thing to do. Breakdancing, graffiti, you know, that was the thing to do.
How's your breakdancing?
It was decent.
Better than graffiti?
Popping and locking.
What were you good at? What was the best thing?
I was good at singing. I could sing my ass.
Really?
Yeah, I could sing my
singing?
Ass.
Singing?
Singing, yeah. Went to school for voice. Italian opera.
Maybe he's a good person to ask. Italian opera?
Yeah. I sang Italian opera on the Cactus album at the end of Words of Wisdom.
Oh, that's right.
Caro mio ben.
Search, hilarious. You are incredible.
This is Italian opera.
I used to. My voice is shot.
You should do an aria.
You want to do it now?
My voice is shot.
Now, hold on. Do you think he'd be a good person to ask the eternal question? Why was everyone always trying to stop the poppers from popping and the breakers from breaking?
Yeah. Yeah, because breakdancers needed space. You know what I'm saying? Like, you needed room.
Oh, so that's why they say let the poppers pop and the breakers break.
Right, exactly.
Give them some friggin' space.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Fall back.
Because we always want to know, why is everyone trying to prevent this from happening?
That, well, it looked like they were gang fighting.
I know.
They were just dancing.
They were just having fun.
They were just dancing.
Just dancing.
And then they would... You know,
the poppers pop.
And the breakers break.
That's what I say.
And the breakers break.
Now, why can't they break? That's what they are. They're breakers, for God's sake.
Exactly. Okay,
so when does it start turning into like you're doing music? You just make it through high school?
I made it through high school, and then I started letting people hear me rhyme one person at a time, letting them rhyme, you know, just one person. And everybody's like, okay, all right, you're cool. And then I get a scholarship to go to the St. Louis School of Music, 4-year scholarship. Free ride the whole night.
You want to be an opera singer?
I wanted to be a rabbi. Like, originally I wanted to be a cantor or a rabbi. That's what I originally wanted to be, but I wasn't.
You have to sing for that?
Yeah.
Cantor, yes.
Yeah, you got to sing. You got to have a
Isn't
voice.
There a cantor school?
Yes. Theological school, Yeshiva University. Oh so God, I was thinking about going to Yeshiva University and doing that, but I got this full ride to go to St. Louis. But I'm like, I'm a Queens kid. The fuck am I going to do in St. Louis? St. Louis is whack. Like, this was before they made it just like Compton. You know what I mean? Like, I was thinking St. Louis. I don't know. I'm going to stay in New York. But what am I going to do in New York? Well, I'm going to be a rapper. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a rapper.
So this is like 84,
85. 85. So I told my mom I'm going to be a rapper. And she goes, what do you mean? You're going to wrap gifts at Macy's? Like, what do you mean?
She didn't even know what you meant.
Yeah, she had no idea. So I'm educating my mom on the culture. And my mom says, so you're going to give up a 4-year scholarship to college to be a rapper.
Oh, that
and
you guys,
mom said.
I will. I wonder which one of you is the bigger idiot. Syf gave up before your ride. Syf was NYU. He gave up.
Oh, you're an idiot.
I'm an idiot.
You're a
fucking
retard.
When people say mistakes in your life, that's
a full ride to NYU.
Full ride to NYU. $70,000 a year.
It wasn't $70,000 then, but it was still a lot.
It was the equivalent of,
that's for sure.
So I don't go to St. Louis School of Music. I'm going to be a rapper. And she says, okay, well, do you have a plan? I said, yeah, I'm going to be a rapper. She said, no. Do you have a plan? Like, what's your plan? If I'm going to co-sign you not going to college, what's your plan?
See, this is where that.
So I'm like,
this is where I wish I had a white mom, you know, like a Jewish. This is where it happens, right here.
What's the plan? Let's make a plan.
Yeah. So, like, I'm like, geez, I didn't think of it. So I start going through a plan. I'm like, well, first I got to get a manager, and then I got to find a producer, and then I got to make a demo, and then I got to, shop the demo. So I'm going through this, but then I got to go meet people.
Are you writing this all down?
Yeah, I wrote it all down on a piece of paper. I wrote it down. It took me about a day, and I wrote it down, and I said, give me 3.5 years. Give me 3.5 years, and I'll have a record contract. And she said, okay, you have a choice. 3.5 years, I'll support you. You can live in the house. You have to work a job. I'll support you. Let you do your endeavors to be a rapper. 3.5 years, you don't have a record contract. You have two choices. Go to school and move out, or get a job and move out. But either way, you're moving out.
Right.
That's like, bet. So for 3.5 years, I treated my house like a hotel. Came in, shit, shower, shave. Ran the streets. Vandermeer Projects battling, Marcy Projects battling, Latin Quarter battling, Union Square battling.
You like, had a job?
I had a job. I delivered food to shelters, and USDA had a program out of Far Rockaway. So I drove a truck, and I delivered food in the day, and at night I'd run around.
Streets.
I ran the streets. So, yeah. So I did that, and then I had another job where I drove yeshiva kids at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock at night from Queens to Far Rockaway to go to yeshiva. So I had that job. So I did that, and then I did my USDA job, then that, and then I'd go out. So I was getting about 3 hours of sleep a night, or on the weekends if I really crashed. I would literally sleep sometimes 2 days in a row.
On the weekend?
Yeah.
Because you were out on weeknights.
Oh,
weeknights when it was popping.
I mean, Thursday nights was dope. Like, Thursday nights, you'd
where
go
were
to
you
Nell's,
Thursday nights?
Go to Nell's. You go to the Saint. You go to Mars.
So on the weekend it was like,
well, you go to Latin Quarter.
They didn't have hip hop clubs.
Well, they did, starting like 86, 87. You had Latin Quarter. You had Union Square. You had Rooftop. Then you had the SNS on 145th and Lenox. So you had a bunch of spots that you could go to, but they were like, you know, the rotation was like Friday night. You go to Latin Quarter. Start your night off Latin Quarter. You get there when Fat Raul was DJing, just before, you know, Red Alert got there. Then Red Alert would get there. Just as Red Alert got on, you'd listen to him for about an hour, and then 1 o'clock you go to Union Square, down at Union Square. You listen to Clark Kent. He would be DJing. Check out Clark. Then about 3 o'clock in the morning you go up to the Rooftop right near Rucker. You check out Busy Bee. Busy Bee would be up there, and then about 5 o'clock in the morning, you'd go to SNS, and that was Star Child, and Star Child would be doing things, and then you'd be there till about noon, and then you'd go home. Be there till about noon.
Noon, yeah.
5 a.m. to noon?
Yeah, about
They serve breakfast?
They didn't serve breakfast, but there was a lot of, like, weed and playing cards and
hanging out.
You're just chilling, listening to music. So it'd be about, like, 10, 11, and then you'd go home, you'd go to sleep, and you'd start all over again. But it was all the network. Like, everybody was there. Red Alert was there. Russell was there. Like, all the people that were grinding in hip-hop were out at these clubs. You had to be there. You had to be seen. You know, this was this was the internet. Like, if you battled a dude on Friday and you beat and you served him, then the word spread by Sunday. If you were out, people were like, oh, yeah, I heard you battled so-and-so. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that was the internet. That was our. That was the like the ghetto network news. Yeah. That's what it was.
So how uncommon were you, or not uncommon at all, was it to be the white boy in the scene?
Oh, I was the only white boy.
The only.
I was.
Where's
only
Rick Rubin? He's not around.
Rick Rubin's not. He's not in the clubs. Rick Rubin's producing.
Beastie Boys.
Records. Never saw them. Never saw them at the Latin Quarter. Although Hold It Now Hit It was a monster. It made me so mad.
You were tight because they had a hit, but they weren't
so
there.
Tight. I was so tight.
Fuck these guys. They're downtown doing some fucking hardcore
no
punk shit.
No one's around. No, Lior?
Lior, nope. He wasn't in the clubs. The only white boy I saw a year later was Dante.
I was going to say Dante.
Dante had to start showing up at some point.
Where's Dante? L.E.S., right?
He was L.E.S., but he would show up. He would show up at the Latin Quarter, like 86.
So I'm just thinking after. His neighborhood. Like,
yeah, he was downtown. He was in the L.E.S.
But there was really no other...
And there was the World. Like, the World was popping on Wednesday night to go to the World downtown. So there was... And Save the Robot was...
Did you get love as the white boy?
Yeah, I did.
Did you get pussy?
I did get a lot of pussy.
Come on.
What?
I did. I don't know. I did. It was great.
You were getting a lot... I mean...
I was getting a lot of pussy.
Oh, so he's like Drewski back then.
Yeah!
Drewski's my boy. He's Angie's producer, but he's a white kid from Jersey, but... like just flared out, like
he might as well be black.
He walks into a club and black girls just fall at his knees.
Yeah, I used to get a lot.
I'll take her. You know what? I shouldn't be saying this.
I was definitely getting a lot of action. I never fucked a white girl. That's the only thing I never did. I never kissed or fucked a white girl
in your life.
In my life.
Have you talked about this on your TV show yet?
The execs are gonna love this.
Yeah, no,
yeah, they're gonna be thrilled.
Have you talked about it on your TV show yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, like, that's gonna be amazing. You gotta bust that out.
Yeah.
That's an amazing. Is. You're the subject that day.
Yeah.
You've never kissed a white woman.
Oh, Gary's turning red.
Yeah, this is good.
You've never kissed a white woman.
My mom and my sister.
You got to get a guest host.
I don't think he meant that.
Your
way.
Sister.
I did not, Gary. You're right, Gary Rosen. I did not mean that.
Who's your sister?
My sister.
She older?
Yeah, she's older sister.
Do I know her?
No.
She was never around.
No,
anything.
She was in Montreal at the time.
I feel like I know her.
But it was
don't get distracted.
A lot of Puerto Rican girls.
Puerto Rican girls are the best. Listen, I'm not complaining. I'm not mad.
I married a Puerto Rican African American girl.
Oh, she's Puerto Rican. I thought your wife was always black. I didn't know she was half Puerto Rican also.
I know she was half.
Yeah, she's half.
Half Puerto Rican, half
Puerto
black.
Rican, yep. And then.
And then Jew.
She
mixing
had to,
the Jew.
She had
yeah,
to do
I,
it.
I say all the time, I'm raising African American, Puerto Rican, Polish, Jewish kids.
That's really amazing. That's beautiful. How many kids do you guys have?
I have three.
I can't believe you never hooked up with a white girl in your life.
Never. They didn't want no parts of me because I was so urban and so street.
You're a wigger.
I was a wigger.
Oh, I just said that.
Yeah. So what, that was good, by the way.
In high school, too? The girls weren't fucking with you?
Nah. They
you came off. So we're in high school, did you come off as sort of a nerdy white kid who wanted to be black? Or were you cool and wanted to be black?
No, I was just cool and wanted to be black.
So you were, and question, in high school, were you fucking black chicks in high school, too, or no?
Yes.
Oh, so you were still getting some. They took you seriously.
Oh, it's they not took like, me real seriously.
Because like, a lot of times when I first started hanging out with black kids in school, in middle school, I felt like I was very popular, but they didn't take me seriously. I was entertaining, but I wasn't getting any.
No, I was entertaining, but I was having
you're
a little fun,
too. You're also from the suburbs.
Yeah, it's a little different. New York's pops a little more.
It does pop a little more.
Yeah, this little shit was happening in middle school more
things
than high school.
Things were definitely moving forward a little fast.
So you're, okay, so now we're on the clubs, mid-80s.
You know, but you're in the clubs, but do you know Red?
Yeah.
Russell and it.
Just from being everybody. There on the Red.
Yeah, Red Alert, I used to do promos called Search is Always Getting Dissed. He used to love them. I used to do these things where I was like, bring a girl up there, and I'd be like, "Hey, baby," and she's like, "Shut up, I'm listening to Red Alert," and I'd be like, "Damn, Search is always getting dissed."
Oh, like a skit?
Yeah, it was a skit. And then like people would say to me on the streets, "Oh my God, your Search is always getting dissed, ha ha ha." You know, that's how I got like a little name recognition in New
York.
From
Red just putting you on, and that's only because you guys were homies.
Yeah.
And that's because, I mean, in 85, Red's the man in the club, but he's not like a superstar in New York yet, right? He's still a normal dude.
It wasn't until like 86.
That he became like pop.
Hip-hop. Right.
Hip-hop famous. Yeah, hip-hop superstar. Yeah.
But I knew I saw Russell all the time. You know what I'm saying? I saw Russell all the time. I saw
is that eventual?
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde all the time. Like, I would see a lot of people.
Does your eventual signing with Def Jam happen because of this? Is this what leads
what
to
happened? To, no, what, how I got signed to Def Jam was Dave Funkenklein, who was an A&R guy.
Klein again. He keeps Dave Funkenklein keeps coming up.
God bless the day. His name?
God bless. Yeah. Someone. Well, let's hear. When we hear more, we'll remember who just brought him up.
Funkenklein was doing the battle for world supremacy at the New Music Seminar.
Yes.
And he asked me to battle in '87, and so I did, and I won the first round. I won the second round. I'm in the third round, and Mr. Magic tries to grab my mic. Mr. Magic was on BLS at the time. It was like Red Alert's competition. So he tries to grab my mic, and I'm like, nah, I'm about to go on. So he like throws some water on. Don't you know who the fuck I am? I'm Mr. Magic.
Oh, some water on my back. That sounds like Mr. Magic.
He throws some water on my back. So I decided.
Literally threw water on your back?
Yeah. So I was like, I decided that my rhyme wasn't going to be against my competitor. My rhyme was going to be about BLS and how shady they were. So off the top of my head, I start talking about how BLS is WBL Fest, and Mr. Magic's really Mr. Tragic, and that whole shit is a fable. He sniffs blow on the thing, takes money under tables to play records. I'm dissing him. I'm like, I'd rather listen to Red Alert say, yee, all this. So I do this whole battle thing, and not even paying attention to the dude I'm battling, and I'm just like going off. And then I go backstage, and all of a sudden, I feel this guy like rubbing my shoulders. I turn around, it's Russell. And Russell says, if anybody asks you, tell them you signed a Def Jam. And that's how I got my record contract.
Let's stop. Hold on, real quick.
What about the Warlock record?
The Warlock record I put out in 85.
Oh, it was before that?
Yeah, I put out in 85. I put out a single.
Did it do anything?
No, not really.
Here's a big question. Why was Russell rubbing your shoulders?
Russell wanted to make a connection. He wanted to make an emotional connection. You know?
So, so when did Pete Nice and...
He was already in the picture.
Really signed to Def Jam.
He meant that?
He did, but it took a year.
Like, here's how I pick up girls in the club, right? I go up to them, I say, hey, if I see a girl getting bothered by a dude, I go up to her and say, hey, if anyone's bothering you, just say I'm your boyfriend. But I'm not really her boyfriend.
Right.
So did Russell really just... Did he give you a deal, or he was just saying?
No, he did
that with me.
I had to run and get an attorney. I got an attorney.
So he was basically saying you're signed to Def Jam.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like, who else was there? Who else was around Def Jam then?
Public Enemy,
LL,
and Slick Rick.
They're pretty good.
I mean, don't forget. Please don't forget Orange Juice Jones.
All right,
Orange Juice Jones.
Who got a Grammy nomination that year?
He did
for The Rain.
See?
Yep.
The Rain is...
And Original Concept. Can't forget about Original Concept. Knowledge Me, Ami.
So, what's Pete Nice doing?
Pete Nice was watching me battle. I mean, we were putting the group together. You know, originally, when I signed to Rush, I signed as a solo artist. So I was in the studio solo working on my demo. And A&M was coming to see me. They were thinking about signing me and a dude out of Houston named Raheem. So they wanted to meet me, but I had already met Pete and decided to do the whole Three to Hardway thing. That was the original name of the group, me, Sam Sever, and Pete. So they didn't understand, like...
Sam Sever just as a producer?
As a DJ.
As a DJ? Okay.
As a DJ as well. So they didn't really understand the whole group thing. They thought it was like a wannabe Beastie Boys thing. So he didn't get it, so they didn't give us a deal. And Leo,
yeah, because there's
crazy.
No other groups ever. Just the Beastie Boys. No other groups.
At that time, there was no other windows for white rappers. Like,
they didn't get it.
Yeah,
we could have a solo one. That could be different, that but there's already
different.
A group.
That's different.
Right. Yeah, so there it is. So my mom says to me, she goes, well, why can't you just be the front man and like Pete could be your hype man? I'm like, that's not how a group works. Like, I can't do that. Like, Pete's not going to go for that, and I don't feel comfortable asking him. So it took another year after that. After that happened in 86, 87, It took another year for Russell and Lior to say, okay, we're interested in doing the deal.
Where did you meet him?
I met Pete at Sam Seva's crib. Sam had called me and said, yo, I was in a studio with this dude. You guys, he's also thinking about signing a Rush. You guys should link up and join forces and make this group happen.
What's Pete's ethnic background?
Pete is a white man.
Just white?
Yeah. He's just a Caucasian.
Pete is a white man.
No Jew?
No, definitely
no
not.
No Italian?
Jew. No, I don't know what he is.
Really?
Real talk.
And was he similar to you style-wise?
No, he was much cooler than I was.
Really? Yeah. I mean, no offense, he always seemed that way. But how did... I'm sure you know that. That was the deal. I mean, he was the cool guy.
Right.
But he was like that, too. He was smashing black chicks, too. He's killing it out there, too?
I don't ever remember seeing Pete with a black chick.
Oh, Pete Nice is a racist.
Yeah.
Oh, now you heard it on one episode. Pete Nice
refused black women.
He played ball with a lot of black people. I guess that doesn't make him a racist, right? Right. But he had a girlfriend at the time who's still his wife at this time.
Her name
was Roxanne.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
So,
what? Yeah. Yo, he missed out on that.
Yeah.
Because everyone.
I remember reading a story. Remember in the. I think it was The Source. I'm not positive. Where they. Oh, maybe it was about, it was him, and he said he got into a fight with a meter maid?
No, that was me.
Oh, you got into a fight with a meter maid.
And it got on CBS. It made CBS News.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some crazy shit.
What happened?
They towed my car, and it got on 60 Minutes that I had a beef, I had a fight with a meter maid.
Did you fight the meter maid?
I didn't fight. I pushed a meter maid.
A woman?
Yeah.
Catch a charge?
No.
Do you ever catch any charges?
No.
Never?
Never.
All right, so you and Pete are three the hard way with Sam Sever.
Right, we're three the hard way.
Who's Sam Sever?
Sam Sever is a producer.
I know his name.
He worked on Mantronics. He worked on Run DMC.
Mantronics.
He did Just Ice, LaToya. He produced a lot of records.
Okay.
Oh, so he'd already done a lot of stuff by the mid-80s.
A lot of stuff on Sleeping Bag. Joyce Sims.
Wow.
He did a lot of records.
Is he around?
Sam, he's around. He's still making beats, but, you know... He hasn't really published anything
in a while. Okay.
Yeah. So Sam decides that he's not going to.
I need it.
Sam decides that he's not going to be in the group. He's going to be a producer. So we go and get Daddy Rich and we form Thursdays.
How do you know Daddy Rich?
Clark Kent, who was originally DJing with Pete at KCR in New York at their radio show, introduced Rich to Pete.
Wait, Clark was DJing with who? Pete Nice? Mm-hmm. Pete Nice had a radio show on KCR?
The first rap show at KCR.
Pete hosted?
Yep.
Oh, shit.
DJ too or just hosted?
No, just hosted. Clark Kent was the DJ.
And Clark Kent brought Daddy Rich?
Yep.
You guys get Daddy Rich. Where's Daddy Rich from? Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Yep, Beverly Road.
Daddy Rich from Brooklyn. He's on board. Signed his third base.
We signed 3.5 years to the date that I promised my mother.
Right there. Yeah. Really, right around 3.5.
And she gave me two letters. She gave me one letter that said how proud she was of me and that this path was just the starting line and that getting this contract and getting signed was just the first step.
Wait a minute, she wrote like you a letter?
Wrote me a letter. That now
Mom
I really
sounds like
had
a cool lady.
Hold on, but let me hear the second letter.
Second letter was a list of all the expenses she had laid out for me.
Yes.
Do you have to pay that back?
$17,956.37.
Wait, I thought she said she was going to cover you, hold you down.
She did hold me down until I got a check, and then she wanted a piece.
And then she took her piece.
But here's the thing. But she didn't take it all up front. I gave her $5,000 of my advance.
Well, how much was the advance?
$50,000.
Not bad.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. So I gave her $5,000, and then I told her the rest of it I would pay with my ASCAP royalties. So I called ASCAP and I said, listen, I want you to make my beneficiary my parents and have all the checks go to them. So it was great because they would call me and go, Michael, do you know your record played in Israel 7 times? You got $1.23 in Israel this month. You know your record played in Germany 4 times? They played Gas Face 4 times. You made 56 cents.
Oh, that's what... I thought Jay said Searchlight Publishing. He said Search Mom's Publishing.
I knew I paid God. Search Mom's Publishing.
She owns Nas Publishing, yo. It's crazy.
So I finally paid it back. It took like 6 years. She sent me a letter that said paid in full, and it was
You didn't get any publishing checks.
I never saw a, I never saw a royalty check or a publishing check from Third Base ever.
Because it was going straight to your mom.
No,
and it wasn't that big anyway.
Russell in New York kept it.
Oh, that's it.
No, the ASCAP royalties are performance royalties. Right. That's separate.
Yeah.
You know, that's separate than publishing.
And you still get those.
Yeah, I still get
them. But until it was paid off, it was going straight to her.
And then it reverted back to my kids.
We need to take a quick aside here, because at the same time, not long after Third Base comes out, KMD comes out.
Correct.
And KMD's your guys.
My guys from Long Beach, Long Island.
So where did KMD come from?
Well, I always hung out with Doom and Sub Rock, God bless the dead. They were always my boys. Like, we had our crew, GYP.
Were they, like, at Union Square and all those clubs, too?
No, they were too young, and they didn't really like to travel. So we used to hang out in Long Beach together. Like, my man Ahmed and Otis lived on the block. They became our dancers, and they lived on the block. And it was not even an issue. Like, if I get on, you get on. Like, that's what it was. And Dante went from Tommy Boy to Elektra. And he wanted to sign KMD. So we created, Pete and I created Ramen is Fundamental, a production company, and we signed KMD to
How Elektra. Much younger were KMD?
I think 3 years.
Sub Rock, Zevlov X, who's Doom.
And Onyx. Yeah.
Okay, first of all, was the name Doom related to him at any point
no,
then?
No, he was
only Zevlov X.
Yeah.
Was he a weirdo?
No.
Not weirdo at all.
Not at all.
Okay, can you tell us, how did Sub Rock die exactly?
He was walking in Far Rockaway, of all places, and got hit by a car. He was on Route 878, and him and his boys were trying to cross the street, and he got hit by a car.
Drunk driver or anything, or just?
I don't know. That I don't know. It was 2 o'clock in the morning.
Jeez.
And this was after their album had already come, after the first album had come out.
The first album came out, and the second album got banned, and they were about to sign a new deal.
Oh, so it was already when Black Bastards had gotten banned.
Yeah.
And someone just told a story to my brother about Sub Rock's wake. Mm-hmm. And that, like, everyone from hip-hop was at Sub Rock's wake.
I don't know if everybody from hip-hop was at his wake. I remember Dante being there. I remember, like, a lot of our boys being there. I wouldn't say everybody from...
But a lot of people... I mean, I remember it being a big deal at the time.
No, it was a big deal. And you know what? In all fairness, let me rewind, because that's not really accurate. I wasn't at the wake. I was at the funeral. So I didn't really go to the wake. I went to the funeral. So at the wake, that could have been the case.
How distraught were you guys?
I was devastated. I was devastated, especially because me and Pete had already separated, and Sub Rock and ZL decided to go with Pete. You know, when we separated, they went with Pete. So I was a little salty about that. I mean, you're my boy, is like, you know, but then I got a chance to make peace with Sub Rock.
Why'd they go with Pete?
Pete offered them a deal, and they took it. I wasn't ready. I was so focused on Nas and OC that I wasn't really in a situation to, like, bring anything else on. You know, I was really focused.
So it hurt, but you also knew that you were going a direction with some people.
Right. But it was still, they were my boys. Like, you know, in the divorce, Pete got the kids and I got the house.
Right.
You know, that was, I felt some type of way about that.
And what happened to Doom after Sub Rock died? Like,
that's when, you got to remember something. I haven't seen Doom in a long time. So I can't really speculate. But for me, outside looking in, that's when he became MF Doom.
And were they brothers?
Yes.
They were blood brothers?
Yes.
So he was really fucked up.
Yeah.
So your album comes out.
Cactus.
Cactus album comes out.
25th anniversary this year.
Step
into the AM.
It's kind of big. It's a little noise, right?
A little noise. 500,000 singles.
500,000, God.
25,000 in the first week.
Really?
Wow. 7 to the AM.
Red Alert shows at Mad Love.
Everybody. Chuck Chill Out. Everybody. I mean, everybody.
Marley plays it too. Everyone played it.
Everybody played it. I mean, the thing that was crazy was I didn't realize the slow burn that it took for records to grow. I thought a record comes out and it pops, and if it pops, it pops. It doesn't. So record comes out, and we're hearing, you know, I'm hearing the mix shows doing it, but there's nobody really playing it. And they're not putting out the record. And then I get a call to go to London with Pete, because the European side of the business really wants to promote us, and they want to put out 7 to the AM and all this. So we go overseas, and we're there for about a week. And I get back, And I remember this like as clear as day. When I went to the airport, my dad took me. When I got back, there was a limo for me. I get in the car and Carol Ford, who was the voice of New York radio in middays, says, "We got a great new record. You know, step into the AM, third base." She's announcing our record.
Oh, playing in the daytime.
Yeah, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's when I knew it was about to be on. And then I got a fax saying, "You guys sold 25,000 records this week."
Wait, what station was she on?
She was on Kiss, Kiss FM.
Carol Ford was middays at Kiss.
Yes.
What, the fax?
Oh, my God.
Nice.
So, Step Into the AM, what did the album end up doing?
Album did 615,000.
And what did Cactus album Revisited do?
100,000.
What was the point of Revisited? What was on there?
CJ McIntosh and a lot of remixes. Pete wanted to do a remix, so he did one with Molly for Proc of the Environment. Prince Paul wanted to do a remix. You know, we just wanted to do an international remix album for like some
Brooklyn
of our
Queens
cuts.
Was my shit. Just Thank so you know.
Yeah, I have the 45 in case you're wondering. It's wonderful.
Are you?
Yeah.
You really have
the only one I don't have on 45 of those is Steppin'.
So let me ask you a question. If I re-release Cactus this year, which we plan to do, should I do 12 inches or 45?
I think these days the trendier look would be 45.
Yeah, if you did some 45 shit.
And you would do, and you would want to do.
I'm going to do every single cut on 45.
Yeah, I would.
Every single song off the album?
Yep.
You could do that, and you could
all this TV fucking money.
Make it rain. Make it rain 45s. You could do A-side. You could do instrumentals, or you could throw remixes on them. Right. You know, other stuff you have in the stash.
Not really a lot. I mean, we put everything. We probably regurgitated everything onto that vinyl. Like, we crammed everything, all 23 songs.
Well, yeah, and you had a remix album, so you had plenty of.
Yeah.
Nas.
We got to get to Nas, right?
Talk show.
Yeah, we're gonna get
the talk they know show. The talk show's 4 p.m. on Pix 11.
Yeah, but we could talk about it a little bit.
No, I think that'll just our listeners.
Un poquito. How about that?
No, our listeners will just resent it. They'll just go. What they want to hear is happy moments of Search's entire career. And then they go, now I want to watch his TV show.
I think they know their show better than we do. I don't know.
No, we're gonna
Gary, we're gonna get there. We haven't mentioned Nas yet, and this is
that's cool.
This is such a brought up thing is the relationship with Nas. So. Before we talk about Pop Goes the World.
Hold on, we got Large Professor's story. We have.
You mean the different angles of Nas?
Who else?
Who else just told us one beside after Large Professor?
Oh, Kool G Rap.
Kool G Rap had a good Nas story.
Great story. Nas used to be at G Rap's house all the time.
That's what
he said. That's how he met Large Pro.
Right.
And then Large Professor told us some ill shit. Where do you come in?
Yeah, tell us your Nas story.
I was working on my solo album, and Stretch Armstrong.
Oh, so this
and
is
Reef,
you broke up.
92. Yeah, 92.
Third base broke up.
Yeah, so I'm working on a record called Back to the Grill Again.
One of my favorites.
I remember that song.
And one of my at the time, before it became like something of like folklore, it was just a really great song. I fucking love that song.
Thank you, B.
And don't forget about Here It Comes.
I love that record.
And you know what I love about Here It Comes? The fucking cover art on the 12-inch.
Yeah, right under the Far Rockaway L.
It's awesome. Yeah. All right, so
Danny Clinch.
So you're working on Back to the Grill.
So I'm wearing Back to the Grill. Back to the Grill again. OC just did his verse. And Reef and Stretch come by with Percy P, The Riddler, and Nas. And he's like, yo, can these guys jump on the record? Reef and Stretch. Daddy Free.
Okay.
So, they all come through. Everybody drops a verse. And Nas just...
A lot of white boys. Big white boys scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of Caucasians.
Finally, they all found each other.
A lot of Caucasians in the building. T-Ray, a producer, another white man.
T-Ray's white, too. That's right.
A lot of white devils.
A lot of devils. T-Ray did Back to the Grill?
Yep. Yeah. Me and him did it together. And Anton Pushansky, another white man. Engineering. And playing bass. So Nas decides to fall back and hang out. So I'm like, yo, you wanna drop a verse? He's like, yeah, let me feel the record out first, and I'll come back tomorrow. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. So next day,
this is after Live at the Barbecue, right?
Oh yeah,
that's why it's called Back to the Grill.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, Live at the Barbecue's out. Oh, so you knew who Nas was.
Yeah,
because Back to the Grill is you're going back to the barbecue.
Okay,
not really going back to the barbecue. We had Kick 'Em in the Grill off Derelicts. Going back to the grill again.
You're going back to that grill.
That grill.
That's funny. I always thought about it because it's a posse cut.
Uh-huh.
I always thought about Live at the Barbecue, even though there's really not that much of correlation besides Nas.
Right.
All right, keep going.
So Nas comes back the next day and he tells me, yo, I need your help. I got this deal. I don't feel good about it.
Why your help?
He just wanted my help.
But he's rolling with Stretch and Reef and... No, oh.
Oh, the Nas, the Schnazul.
He wanted the Schnazul. He wanted that Jew advice.
He wanted that.
He didn't
schnazul.
Have a manager?
No. He had an attorney, Scott Felcher.
And he wasn't signed to Large Pro or nothing like that?
No, he wasn't signed to anybody.
So he had a deal on?
Big Beat. Big Beat.
Big Beat.
Stretch and Reef had made him an offer.
So he didn't sign it. Okay.
And the offer was $150,000 and 50% of his publishing, no advance on the publishing.
Okay, that sounds
crazy. And he said Nas felt some type of way about it. And he asked me to help, and I said, I can't help you unless you sign a Searchlight. Like, I can't. I'm not going to go negotiate with friends. Like, he's like, all right, I'll sign.
Searchlight
Music at the time.
Which was like your production company?
Yeah. Searchlight Music. I'd already signed OC, and then I signed another group out of Queens called Total Pack. So there was a bunch of groups I was working on. So,
I never knew that he signed OC till today.
You never knew that?
Nope.
Oh, yeah.
I guess he used to bring the OC records to Fat Beats. So I guess
that's
why
how you know.
I A&R'd that Word Life album. I executive produced it.
Did not know you executive produced Word Life.
No, that you knew.
It's in the video. For Time's Up?
Yeah.
I directed Time's Up.
I feel like an idiot. I don't remember it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
As big of a fan as you are of mine, you don't know that?
Well, I was in the mix.
Right.
Like, one of your best friends was Eclipse, who managed Fat Beats.
My daughter's godfather.
And then you got the A&R job at Wild Pitch. Right. So I might be more in the mix.
And for the record, real quick, I started DJing in 94. Word Life was already very hard to get. It was single vinyl. So I never splurged on single vinyl albums. So I never really looked at the credits on it.
Right.
So I really only knew what he said on records. I didn't really. Anyways, keep going.
No. So Nas signed with Searchlight, you know, and I gave him a very fair deal. Like, yeah. My whole thing was I didn't want to be the Jew that jerked black men.
Right.
Like, I wasn't going to be that guy.
Okay.
So I go to Stretch and Reef.
Like a porno.
Yeah.
That's a porno about my life. It's a Jew that jerked black men. If you read the comments on YouTube about me, that's what people think.
Gay porn right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I go to Stretch and Reef and I said, listen, I can't let him sign this deal. You know this deal is bullshit. And he's like, listen, this is what Craig Kalman's offering. Come on, Serge, don't get in the way. I said, I can't. It's like, it's a shady deal. It's like a 1988 deal. Like, the guy's Nas. He's going to be the greatest MC of our generation. Like, you can't.
And then you all knew. Everyone knew.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Helen Keller could see in here that he was going to be the genius that he was. So they said, we can't offer him anything better. So I go to Russell. This is all happens in one day. I go to Russell. I go to his apartment. I play him the demo.
What's on the demo?
The demo's like a lot of...
It Ain't Hard to Tell. And a record called I'm a Villain. It was two records.
Oh.
Russell says Nas sounds like G-Rap, and G-Rap ain't selling no records, so he don't want to deal with Nas.
I love it.
He don't want to fuck
with him. I love those stories.
So I said, okay, it's fine. So then I go to Faith Newman, who A&R'd Cactus with me at Def Jam. She's now at Columbia, Sony, or Columbia.
It was Columbia.
It was Columbia. So I go to her and I say, I got Nas. And she says, sit down, wait right here. She brings the president of A&R and she says, you're not leaving this office until we sign Nas. So I said, okay, I want as many points as Billy Joel. I want $250,000 and I want a $50,000 advance, non-recoupable for Nas. And they said, well, we can't give you as many points as Billy Joel. I said, then you don't sign Nas. It's really simple.
Jeez.
How did you have the gall?
The chutzpah.
The chutzpah, if you will.
Because his mom taught him with the letter and the and the contract and the bill.
You knew that he was worth that.
Oh, yeah. Worth that and more.
So they caved?
They caved. They gave it to me.
Shit.
Gave me 23 points.
What?
On Illmatic. Yep.
So Nas is good.
Oh, Nas was good at 60,000 records.
Nas had
recouped on Illmatic at like 75,000 records.
How many did it sell?
He did 165,000 first week.
He did?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a big deal when it dropped. As we approach the 20 year this April.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
And
then I go and get him a publishing deal. And this is where the confusion comes in. I never owned Nas's publishing. I administered
Jay-Z said
Nas. I know.
Jay-Z
well,
said
I'll
you.
Explain
so
the Jay-Z confusion.
Well, I believe Jay-Z.
So I administered his publishing. I got him another $250,000 from Zomba in cash that I got for him. So he could get his mom out the projects and take care of his family and all of that. So we were able to kind of make great deals, and then made the second deal for It Was Written, made a great deal. The reason that Jay thought I owned Nas's publishing was I was working at Def Jam at the time, and he was about to put out Dead Presidents, and he needed the sample cleared. So I said, I'll hook you up. I'll give you a fair deal. Like, I'm not going to jerk you. You're my man, Jay. Like, you know, it's nothing. So I cleared the sample for like $2,000, like something ridiculous. Like, Zomba, I told Zomba, don't get in the way.
We'll, and he paid Searchlight.
And he paid Zomba.
No.
But he thought I was involved. So he thought my company was called Searchlight Publishing, which it wasn't. And it only became Searchlight Publishing last year. It was called Schematics Publishing.
But it also, but we know Jay is ill with the sublims.
Right, it was the subliminal.
And
he
knows he gave you a check, whatever.
Right.
And then he threw out the little Searchlight Publishing. So people are like, oh, Nas don't own his publishing. And
do you know how
Jay
much love I get from that line, though?
It's a crazy line.
People like, yo, I want to sign a Searchlight Publishing. I'm like.
So you just made, you basically made Searchlight Publishing because
recently.
Of the thing.
Yeah, I just did a joint venture with BMG. I just did a.
Do you get a lot of love from the black girls on your TV show? Oh! Did you see that? Did you see that?
Way to go full circle.
Woo!
Gary, you happy?
No, they gotta leave. Nice. They gotta go to MTV. So,
but real quick, I have one more question.
Okay. I don't care. He's gonna beat you up.
No, they have plenty of time. It's 11. Oh, they gotta go. Okay. Why Pop Goes the Weasel? Why Pop Goes the Weasel and Crossover by EPMD came out roughly the same time?
Right.
Both songs were about selling out.
Right.
And both became your biggest commercial hit so far.
I'll tell you.
Why does that happen?
Let me tell you what was crazy about that record. So Dante and the SD50s, you know, Gamble and Gibby and me and Pete were like, we're seeing this ratchetness going on. Hammer.
You did not say ratchetness back then.
Yeah. I didn't say ratchet.
You did not
say it, but whatever the term was.
They said that, right?
Whackness. How's that?
Yeah,
fine.
I wanted to feel a little more update.
Right, right. You said all this whack bullshit.
It was all this crazy whackness going on. Hammer selling 15 million records.
You hated Hammer.
Hated Hammer.
Oh, isn't there a Hammer story? Fuck.
And then Vanilla Ice selling 15 million records. Meanwhile, Tribe Called Quest can't get on pop radio. De La Soul can't get on pop radio. Public Enemy can't get on
pop
radio.
Those groups suck.
Queen Latifah can't get on pop radio.
They didn't deserve it.
Right. And then putting out great music.
Right.
So we're like, Pop Goes the Weasel because the weasel goes pop. It's the only thing that's natural. So we're like, we take the biggest pop record we could think of, Sledgehammer, chop it to death, put it out, and just diss pop radio. We diss the concept of hip-hop going pop. We diss it. We diss pop artists. We diss pop radio.
So how did
it
feel?
Was pop. We go to pop stations. We used to go and do interviews and go, you realize we should not be here. Pete and I would literally go, you realize we're dissing you guys. Like, you should not be interviewing us. You should be hating us.
Well, the record's number one call out on our station at Z100.
And I'm like, yeah, you guys are fucking assholes. You don't understand.
It got that big as Z100 too?
Oh my God, it was crazy. The record was insane.
Did you ever have what was the story? Really quickly, two things. Wasn't there a physical story with Hammer that involves you?
First of all, it's not a short story. I can't get into it.
Oh!
It's got to do part two.
What are we going to do?
We haven't even talked about Daddy Rich's guns yet.
I didn't know that was a story.
Oh, yeah, his guns. Oh, yeah.
What did Gary Rosen
say? No. Gary Rosen, the genius that he said, you know, we could probably, you know, promote this on MCSearch.com and get a part two going.
You want to do a part two? Can we get that in a few weeks? Get you to come back?
I don't know if I can come back, but we'll figure out.
So no, two. Well, then what are we going to do part two?
We could do it by phone.
No, we don't do one MC by phone.
You want to come to Orlando?
Yes.
You can have a budget.
Yes.
You have more budget.
You got
than
money.
I.
You got money.
Oh, you said we have a budget?
Yes.
Oh, no, we don't
have money.
But I do want to go to Orlando. You shoot in Orlando?
No, I shoot in New York. We shot in New York.
Oh,
he'll put you up in.
Well, what if the show gets? What if the show gets green lit?
I have no idea where we're going to shoot yet.
You wouldn't know. How's it doing so far, the show?
So far, good. We beat Ellen and Dr. Oz in New York. We've had some really strong ratings. And
so you think it could happen?
God willing. Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
So why do this show? What's going on?
I always
here?
Wanted, you know, it's funny. Right after White Rapper, a guy named Steve Wall came to me and said, you know, you should have a talk show. And he introduced me to a guy named Jim Paratore, who had done Ellen, TMZ. He did Jenny Jones. He was a legendary.
Jenny Jones, classic.
Legendary. And we did the show, and we did 9 episodes, and I thought it was going to go. And at the very last minute, Tribune picked up Dr. Oz, the very last minute. So I thought it was done, and Jim was like, no, we'll go another year. I'll pay you to stay home. Paid me a huge check to sit home for a year. Shopped it for another year.
Why can't you
Fox was going to pick
it
up.
House arrest?
Yeah, it was pretty much. I couldn't do anything.
Little. You're being too little.
Pay you to stay home.
So
then they picked up Wendy Williams. Then he says, no, 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 I'm going to pick up your third option. Like, my lawyer and my agent are like, this never happens. It was like double the money that he paid me the year before. And while he's doing it, he passes away.
Oh, my God.
So the thing kind of dies with him. And then his right-hand man goes to CBS and is like, yo, Jim would want this. Like, I'm going to take the idea to CBS. Wow. And that's how it came about.
Wow.
6 years in the making.
Well, we will make sure to keep plugging it for you and hope it it gets an opportunity.
Know, the real difficult part of all of this, because I love the podcast, is not being on Hot 97 right now.
That you want to be on the air right now.
I mean, that's I'm a kid from Queens.
Nobody,
you know what I mean?
Like, nobody's on the air like that anymore.
It's crazy.
It sucks.
It's crazy. It's a different
if you put out, if you put out a song and like feature Rihanna on it,
right,
and it gets like 75 spins a week, you could probably get on for like 6 minutes.
How crazy is that?
It's wild.
It's a game changer,
so sad. It's just such a
Jay will show up again on Live, Kanye.
I remember when Funkmaster Flex did his first day at Hot 97. I was up here with him. I did 30 minutes.
Oh, no. No, no, no. Nighttime, you still could rock.
No, he was on in the day. He was in the afternoon.
Right, but I'm saying you could rock with Flex now if you wanted.
Right.
For what we do.
I love your show. I really
do.
Well, wait, this has been.
And oh, wait. I got to shout out my man, Mike McConnell, who is in Orlando, who works for Hot 97 during Summer Jam.
Oh, Mike.
He's listening right
Marathon
now.
Marathon Mike.
You know Marathon Mike? Mike?
Yeah.
That's the homie.
Yeah, we work.
Do you live in Orlando?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I work for Cox in Orlando.
That sounded crazy. Yeah. Hey, there are a lot of chicks who work for Cox in Orlando. real quick, Search, the show's on every day, 4 p.m. on Pix 11. Support our guy, MC Search.
Yes.
True hip-hop royalty. Next time, have to hear the Hammer story.
Okay.
And you guys had other physical confrontations with people, too, didn't you?
Not really. We had one other physical confrontation, but it wasn't, you know, anything to write home about.
Since you're not a talk show host.
You also should hear the Bushwick Bill story. That's a pretty good story, too.
Oh, wow.
Really? You're just going to say that?
Yeah, pretty much.
You're now a talk show host. Can you introduce me to Ricky Lake?
You know Ricky Lake?
Is it like a conference where all you guys go?
Why Ricky Lake?
Because she's on my list.
She's got a thing.
She's on my Hall Pass list. Hall Pass list.
Hall Pass list. He wants to do it.
How about Oprah?
No.
He's more Ricky Lake type.
Yeah.
All right, we're not going to waste time. If they have to leave, they have to leave. Because if they're going to stay, we're going to hear about
Bushwick Bill. We got to go. MTV calls.
Okay.
All right. All right. Search.com.
List all eight markets that we're in.
Search.com. Yeah. Go check it out. Also, check out the Twitter at MC Search.
And what cities are you on in? Say one real quick.
Yeah. We're in New York, Philly, D.C.
All right, my hometown.
WDCW.
Really? All right.
Okay.
L.A.
San Diego.
Okay.
Dallas, Indy, and Miami.
Wow, well, you got great markets to start at. That's
mentioned San Diego.
He did.
Angie loves the show.
Oh,
Angie,
wow.
We watched the first one, and she was like, he's going to kill it. He's doing a great job. This
Angie.
Is perfect
you
for
seem
him.
Like a natural. I mean, it seems like a great fit.
There was one point in that first episode where you just blankly stared at the camera.
No, he didn't, did he?
I guess he was... Had
what
the wrong
the fuck
cue or waiting for the cue card or something.
It was the first day.
There was no cue cards. I didn't work with cue cards.
Whatever.
Don't put me on blast. Don't throw me on the
I was on TV. I read cue cards.
That's you.
I didn't blankly stare. You know what I'm talking about, too.
You know what you're talking about.
Yo, also, big.
I fucking hate you. I fucking hate you, Droopy ass.
And big. Big shout out to Sed Louie, too.
Oh, yeah. That's
saw
my
Sed
guy.
Yesterday with Boldy James.
Oh, and shout out to Sneakers.
And shout out to Young Sneakers, too. Yo, MC Search, part two coming soon.
Yes, without question.
Featuring Gary Rosen.
There you go. Yes.